Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 459 for comics originally released on May 25th, 2016. Now, before we get into this, I'm going to say up front, spoiler alert. We've got two high-profile comics we're talking about this time around, one from DC, one from Marvel, and rather than dance around some of the major issues and stuff in the comic, we're going to actually go whole hog, spoilerific on this stuff, so if you have not read DC Universe Rebirth number 1, there will be time codes in there saying when you can jump to Captain America Steve Rogers number 1. That too had some big stuff, so if you haven't read that, we're going to spoil that. You can jump forward to the one after that. So again, time codes are your friends. We're not going to hold back, and this frankly may be a kind of a long episode. So with that having been said, our first book of the week is DC Universe Rebirth number 1. This was written by Jeff Johns. We've got quite a few artists on this. Let's see, they had the credits in the back of this, and I was so busy reading this I didn't actually put my cheat sheet together on who all of the different...
Jeff Johns and various.
Gary Frank and Ethan Van Sciver on Chapter 1, Gary Frank on Chapter 2, Ivan Rice on Chapter 3, Phil Jimenez and Gary Frank on Chapter 4, and Gary Frank and Ivan Rice on the epilogue. Yeah, various people, but all top-tier talent. Normally, I wait till the day before we record to review the items we're going to discuss. Given the high-profile nature of this, and in order to avoid spoilers, I went ahead and headed to a store and grabbed a second copy at the local store the day it came out.
Ditto.
And, you know, as it was, one major aspect of the story had already been spoiled to me by a coworker who... He was in the news and stuff. He just assumed I knew. And that frankly really kind of frustrated me. Because I mean this I want to read the stuff in the comic, not, you know, secondhand, third hand from somebody else. Unfortunately, while I hit the store and grabbed a copy of DC Universe Rebirth number 1, and I think the same thing happened to you, Drew.
Yep.
I didn't know that I should grab Justice League 50 and Superman 52, which also came out that week.
Yeah, I was bummed.
So I went ahead and read this without having read those. I've since read those and then again reread this.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been nice if a person at the store had kind of mentioned those things, given the cover price on, was it Justice League 50 that was kind of expensive?
Yeah, it was pricey.
Yeah, so I might not have gotten them, but I'd at least known. So this, wow, I mean, this is, I've read the thing twice. Normally I read something, like I said, once the night before, the morning of, we're going to review. Love it or hate it, there is a ton to talk about with this issue. And, you know, they say you can't make an omelet without breaking a couple of eggs. And I'm starting to wonder if we're ever going to get a DC omelet of any sort or just more broken eggs. But it seems like to me, in order to fix kind of the broken timeline and history of the DC universe, multiverse, monoverse, whatever you want to call it, you kind of need to change the timeline, which just kind of breaks it further. So, as a longtime DC fan, it pains me to say this, but I think there are aspects of DC's continuity that are broken, and I'm not sure if they can be fixed. So, I've got very kind of conflicted feelings about this issue and kind of Rebirth in general. Where do you want to dive in on this?
I say we just start at the beginning, maybe.
Maybe kind of go scene by scene?
Yeah.
Okay, we start out with a scene, and again, this is not a typical review for us. We usually don't go into this much detail, but for this, it's a big deal. We're gonna. We get the whole bit with the clock, and that there's something missing in the world, and then we kind of segue into the Batcave. Already at this point, I'm like, okay, who is this narrating? And we're getting this whole bit with Batman in the Batcave and the three Jokers. And already, I'm like, you know, I'm not crazy about this whole three Jokers thing, and arguably, this is as much from the Justice League issue as this, but it's like, do we need three different versions of the Joker? Do we have three different versions of the Joker? Already, I'm a little confused. How did that work for you?
I was fine with it. Right from the beginning, it just seemed to be one revelation after another for me, and one Easter egg that after another that maybe I understood completely, and maybe I didn't have. Background to understand all the way, but I thought I did. And so this was just one of the many page turn revelations that just kept me on the edge of my seat while I was reading it. And I had no problem with this being a reveal that will be explored in the coming issues, months, years.
I wonder how long it's going to take and where it's going to play out, and not knowing that kind of annoys me a little, because from what I've been reading of what's going to happen in Batman and Detective, I'm not seeing a Joker story kind of on the horizon.
Yeah.
And that's maybe okay, but this doesn't seem like the sort of thing that Batman would just kind of let drop or, you know, put on the back burner for a while. To me, though, once you hit that page flip and you've got the reveal of the Wally West Kid Flash, it's like, wow, I love this. Now, first off, the art team they have here is just phenomenal. It's a great style. It really clicks with me. I love the Wally West Kid Flash, the classic one, not the current one. Well, not the prior to this current one that hadn't quite gotten into costume, and we'll get to that later. This whole bit of the Flash, or in this case, Kid Flash, making this appearance in front of Batman, I'm like, you know, geez, I think I've seen this movie. There was a bit where Wally's starting to get pulled back, and there's this pose by Batman, very evocative of early Batman stuff with the cape and whatnot. We get a bit of exposition here, and there was something that the first time I read this, I missed entirely, and I think a couple other people did too. We get the you know, hey, I'm Wally, you know, look for the letter, ask Barry, all this stuff. And then there's as Wally's getting sucked back into the Speed Force, there's this caption: reality from across existence spills out. You know, time rips open as I get sucked back into the Speed Force, yada yada. And I think I'm going to die. This panel right here, we're going to come back to this, I think. Because this, I can either say it now or we can get back to what happens at the end. Which, do you have a preference?
You can say it now.
Okay. At the end, we get the smiley face button.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it gets wedged into the Batcave wall.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
You note the thunk thing or whatever?
Yeah.
As the lightning is hitting the wall? I missed that entirely the first time, too.
Okay.
So there's a definite attempt to kind of play fair here, which I respect. But a lot of this story is following Kid Flash. We get a couple of pages of exposition and background going over his classic origin, him becoming, you know, from the Flash costume to the Kid Flash costume, because originally Kid Flash had the identical costume.
And I think this had to be in here for the emotional resonance later on of the connection between Wally and Barry. I think you had to reiterate this, and it couldn't be something just for the older superfan to know. I really think this had to be here.
It absolutely had to be there, not only for the resonance later, but for anyone who came in with the new 52, they're like, who the hell is this character?
Exactly.
You know, so getting this recap page in something that felt very much like I would have read in the Flash comic back in the 80s or something, as, oh yeah, Kid Flash, here's his origin, just so you know who he is, kind of, just like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it definitely had to be there. Getting kind of the recap of some highlight reel type stuff of from Crisis, and then the next page of kind of post-Crisis with him meeting Linda and all the different Flashes and stuff. I mean, to me, this was really bringing back a lot of what I felt has been missing in the new 52 universe. But then they get into the Flashpoint stuff and the concept of a decade having been stolen from the DC universe. And there were a couple of things popping through my mind at this point. First off, when he first hits the Batcave and stuff, I don't really like Batman's new utility belt, but that's kind of a side note. Where is Kid Flash been? Where's Wally been? Why is he Kid Flash again? You know, he hadn't been Kid Flash since, you know, like before Crisis. So this is about, you know, 20, 30 years or whatever, a little out of date or whatever. Where's he been the whole time and stuff? If I recall correctly, and I very well may not, I think the last time we saw Wally West was in Infinite Crisis when he and a couple other speedsters were trying to pull, I think, Superboy Prime into the Speed Force just to get him out of commission or something. And Jay managed to escape the Speed Force, but was kind of depowered. Bart came back a little later, aged, and took over the Flash title for about a year or so. But I think that was the last time we saw Wally until now. Again, my memory could be faulty, who knows. But, you know, you get this big hand. Anytime you get a big cosmic hand in DC, never a good sign. We then, at the start of Chapter 2 here...
That's Dan Didio's hand, by the way.
Yeah, well, whoever's it is, it needs to be slapped. There's a lot of hand slapping, I think, that needs to go on. This first scene in chapter two, though, with the elderly home, based on what I've read on our forum and stuff, I think there were a couple of people who were also confused by this. And at first, I'm like, okay, while he's trying to find people connected to him or the Speed Force or whatever, he finds this guy who's connected to the lightning. And it quickly becomes clear from the dialogue here, and by that I mean if you are knowledgeable in old school DC, it's clear. If not, you're like, what the hell? This is Johnny Thunder of the JSA. Mm-hmm. This is the guy who would say you, and typically, where they spell it here S-E-I-U, he would just say you ought to do something about that, and boom, his genie would appear. Now, last I thought we saw Johnny, he'd merged with his genie in the JSA title, but all of that was pre-New 52 because we haven't seen these characters since then. But here's a guy who's been in this rest home for 37 years. He's about 99 or something. Has a granddaughter and a great-grandson, who I'm expecting is going to become the next Johnny Thunder and stuff. But while they're teasing bringing the Justice Society back, I'm like, this lightning of the Thunderbolt has nothing to do with the Speed Force. After this, I was expecting Wally to bump into, like, Shazam or something. So I don't know why they used Johnny Thunder here, other than he was probably the youngest member of the JSA and therefore could still legitimately be alive in some way, shape, or form. But they could have used Johnny Quick or Jesse Quick or a few other people for this sort of a thing. But hey, if we're going to get the Justice Society back, I'm not going to complain about this.
Yeah, I assume there was some connection between this Wally West and the JSA that I had not read.
In the run of Wally's book as the Flash, the JSA was a little active at various points, and of course Wally was hanging out with Jay Garrick a lot, who's a key, you know, JSA member. But I don't think there was any particular connection between Wally West and Johnny Thunder at all. I'm racking my mind to see if I can even recall any time I could definitively say they met. And I'm sure okay. At some point they did.
So they really wanted to introduce the Justice Society into this book, and they kind of shoehorned it in, but I didn't realize it. Okay.
I wouldn't say shoehorned it in. I just think it was a stretch to use the lightning connection with Johnny Thunder, whereas I do think, again...
Now, where does it say it's the lightning connection?
When, on the first page of it, he's bolting the door in the kitchen, just go away, let this old man be, he's connected to lightning, too. So right there is the lightning.
Yep.
So, again, Geoff Johns knows his continuity and is playing with it and stuff. I am curious about the line of Johnny Thunder's of when he's referring to the Thunderbolt of, I didn't mean to throw you away. At one point, the genie was like in a pen or something, and he'd accidentally given it away to, I think it was Jakeem, when he took over in JSA. Back to the Speed Force, and he notices somebody else is out of time, but can't connect with them. We get to this one scene that, again, a lot of people, newer readers, are like, what's going on here? Don't know. We've got somebody in presumably Metropolis trying to get in touch with Superman. They've been arrested for stealing a sandwich. All we know, blonde hair, female, and has a Legion flight ring. Clearly a connection to the Legion of Superheroes. Most likely this is Saturn Girl. Again, I'm a huge fan of the Legion of Superheroes. Happy to see this. Have absolutely no idea where this is going to play out later. That kind of annoys me. Now, we just went to Johnny Thunder because of the connection to Lightning. Saturn Girl? Married Lightning Lad. That seems like a connection to Lightning, doesn't it? Just saying. I don't know what point in time Saturn Girl is from, although obviously Legion of Superheroes, the future. I also, and because we never get a clear shot of her, I don't know which version of Saturn Girl this is. Or if this even is Saturn Girl. Maybe it's Dream Girl, it could be other characters, don't know. So, curious what's going on here, hope to get more of this. You remember how when the New 52 started out, there was the Frankenstein Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. title?
Yeah.
One of the characters that was in that was Ray Palmer as their science advisor. Now, as far as I know, he was still the S.H.I.E.L.D. science advisor, and that's S.H.I.E.L.D. all capitals with periods. It was some acronym. I forget what it stands for. Now, he's a professor at Ivy University. He apparently has been for a little bit, a well-respected, publicly well-known professor. You know, the next Neil deGrasse Tyson type. Of course, he's been the Atom and is gone and gotten himself lost in the multiverse, or the microverse.
Microverse, yeah.
Multiverse, yep. Microverse. It's one verse after another. We get a new introduction to a new, his name is right here, and I'm blanking at it. The new Atom.
Ryan something.
Ryan Choi, thank you. who apparently afraid of heights, doesn't like to go outdoors, has allergies, not athletic. The absolute wrong choice for a superhero. And Ray's like, hey, come rescue me. Be a superhero.
And here's a critical bit of information. I'll explain it to you very clearly so nobody gets hurt. Whatever you do, do not.
Yeah, and then the recording cuts out.
It's great. It was great.
Classic.
And I kind of thought, you know, in the Tomorrow, DC Legends of Tomorrow show, there was a couple of years where Ray Palmer was teaching in a college. I was like, maybe there's some tie in there. You know, maybe these are the years he was teaching, but it doesn't seem like it's the right era.
No, because in the TV show, it was in the 50s. And mm-hmm. pre-New 52, classically, the Adam was a college professor. You know, of course, he would miss a lot of classes because he's adventuring as the Adam and stuff. But it fits in, but it's almost trying to position the classic Silver Age Adam as if he had always been this way in the New 52. And that's just not so.
Well, because we had our relationship stolen from us and our time stolen from us. And
so that resulted in him being essentially this other version of himself.
It did for me, John.
Now not.
It did for me.
But I guess my point is, what has changed so far in this issue that puts him in costume as a longtime hero or something that wasn't the case in the New 52 prior to this issue?
You'll have to tune in next week and find out.
You'll have to tell me next week then. Don't make promises you can't keep.
Or maybe the week after that.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love this version of the Atom. I'm okay with him being back this way. But this is where the seams of the continuity are starting to unravel. And again, it's a different version of Ryan's show. And they did such a great job establishing the first time around that I don't know that we need to go through it yet again. Yet we're gonna. We then cut to the two Blue Beetles. This, at least, we know they're getting their own title and stuff, so we can follow along there. While I'm very happy to have Ted Kord back, the interjection of Dr. Fate and the revelation that this alien scarab isn't alien technology, but it's magic. Okay, that's a pretty serious change to what's going on with the character in the backstory. Not saying it's a bad choice, I'm just saying it's different. I also am not quite sure which Dr. Fate this is, because it doesn't really look like the one we've been seeing in his own book. This looks like the classic one, which, again, I'm okay with. And guess what? He's a Justice Society member. So we're already getting some JSA members back. The next page, we get essentially four tiny little scenes here. We assert that Damian Wayne is 13, so he's aged a little bit. We get the new female Green Lantern that's going to be part of the Green Lantern's book, mm-hmm. and a little tiny cameo from Hal, so just, again, teasing those characters. The next one, I'm going to skip for just a sec. At the bottom, we get Pandora. We'll get to her in a sec because we get more on the next page. But this other character we get right before Pandora is Jackson. And I had to do a little bit of digging. I thought I knew who this was, and I was right. It's Jackson Hyde. Now, he was the Aqualad that was introduced in Brightest Day and essentially based on the Calderon version of Aqualad from Young Justice. If you haven't seen that cartoon, it's two seasons of brilliant DC Universe stuff, focusing on the younger heroes, but with quite a few of the Justice Leaguers in there. Now, he wasn't used at all in the New 52, and that kind of annoys me because he was set up as being a member of the Titans at the end of Brightest Day and some of that stuff. They go to all this trouble to introduce him, and then they do nothing with him. So at this point, it's like, do you really want to remind me of almost what's a string of broken promises from DC? Where, hey, we've got this fun stuff we're going to do, and we never get around to doing it because we did something to continuity and went in a different direction.
Was he gay in Young Justice?
I don't recall. It's been long enough since I've watched it, and it wasn't something where he was, you know, overly flamboyant about it if he was gay.
Okay.
He was a cool character. He was a great addition to the Titans era kind of characters. Although they weren't called the Titans, they were called Young Justice.
Now, we don't know who his parents are. Could he be a part of that Super Sons title?
No.
No.
One, I think they've pretty much established it'll be just Damian and Jonathan. So Damian Wayne, Jonathan Kent. Harkening back to the classic saga of the Super Sons, where it's Batman Jr., Superman Jr. Two, well, we don't know this character's parentage and stuff, other than we see his mom there. In Brightest Day, I think they established it was Black Manta that was his father. And I'm pretty sure that was the take they had in Young Justice. Whether that holds true or not, whether we'll ever see Jackson again or not, who knows? And if so, where? I mean, presumably Aquaman, but don't know. That brings us back to Pandora, one of the characters introduced with the New 52 and kind of iconically linked to it since she was spying on everybody for pretty much no good reason. She gets basically vaporized here. I took this as very much a, you know what? The New 52 was ill-conceived and mistake and we're killing it off.
That's exactly how I took it.
The only thing Pandora ever did other than spy on the initial launch characters was basically set up Forever Evil. I know Nicholas J. on the forum was kind of wondering if she ever did anything of importance, and I still think it's debatable. She was one that was forced down our throats as if there was a big game plan, and it never had the payoff it could have. Should have, I think. We then get a tease of some of the stuff that's going to be happening in Wonder Woman with her brother Jason that's been alluded to but never seen yet. Obviously, that'll take place in the Wonder Woman titles, but again, this is almost a travel guide to the DC Universe and teasing some other stories. We get the, oh yeah, Superman's dead, and I thought this was kind of interesting because... Great splash page, but they use it to basically set up the concept of what's missing from this universe is a lot of relationships that we've all known to grow and love, specifically Green Arrow, Black Canary. That they know there's a connection there, but they don't know what the connection is because they don't have the connection. I thought that was a very good character-based way of doing it. The other thing I don't know that people may have noticed is another character that we haven't seen pretty much in forever and a day in the DC Universe, although he was in the New 52, was one of the launch titles. We've got Captain Atom here. Now, he's just standing around kind of minding his own business, nobody wanting to talk to him, and hey, I don't blame him. It's Captain Atom. So, okay, fine, cool, whatever. We'll see what happens here with this stuff. But we then get this very kind of cryptic tease on the Superman stuff, and that the Lois and Clark Superman and his family aren't what they believe they are, and neither is the fallen Superman. And I'm like, what the heck is this? You're giving us mysteries by just thump, here it is, and not really kind of building up to them. And we're getting all this from Mr. Oz. Maybe it's Ozymandias from Watchmen, maybe it's not, I don't know. But if this Superman from Lois and Clark isn't who he thinks he is, and the fallen Superman who just died isn't who they think he is, what's going on? And I'm kind of wondering if they both thought they were the original Superman, and they're not, and that may be setting up maybe getting the Golden Age Superman back, either as a member of the Justice Society or not. I don't know. So some of this was just, let's throw some teasers out and see what happens. I'm hoping Geoff Johns, at the very least, has a good game plan here. I'd like to have faith that he does. I'm not sure if I do have that faith, but I'd like to have it. We got, I thought, a really good sequence with Aquaman and Mira, with him seeming to propose marriage and stuff. And this, again, is hearkening back to, in some cases, the relationship survived. Arguably better here than in previous continuities. That bridges us back to Linda Park, who, in Wally West's Run of the Flash, all the other times he got lost in time or whatever, this was his anchor. And they do a very touching scene where Wally materializes as Kid Flash, and he's like, I'm back, thinking this will be the moment that saves him, as has happened many times before.
Yeah, this will be the connection.
And it's not.
Yeah.
You know, it was well done, and it sets up a very kind of interesting, potentially creepy dynamic for this Wally West character, in so much as it could be that, you know, she may come back and well, again, this Wally survives and comes back. He may try to reestablish that relationship, and she may think he's something of a stalker or something. I hope they don't go down that route. I hope they try to you know, he remembers her, she doesn't know him, and have a nice love story kind of that way.
And this also kind of harkened me to the Flash television series with Linda Park on that show, and I'm thinking, well, what are they going to do? Well, we have a Wally West there as well. Are they going to try to bring them together in the coming seasons? Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be a fun storyline? They have kind of cleared the path for that with some of the later developments in that show. So that's kind of cool. And I like the way these are kind of, at least for me, are kind of sparking my blurring of the lines between the television DC and the comic DC.
Absolutely. On the start of the fourth chapter, while Wally's kind of tumbling through the Speed Force, we get a one-panel teaser for what's going to happen with some new characters not what's going to happen, but that there are going to be new characters in the Batman title, if you happen to know that's where they're going to be.
Well, before you leave Chapter 3,
sure,
you may have touched on it, but I just thought that was pretty heartbreaking, a pretty heartbreaking scene. There's a lot of emotion in this, and this was one of those that you're like, oh, I really thought, you know, he built this up like this was actually going to work,
mm-hmm,
and this was going to pull him back. And you know, having it not work out, you feel like you're supposed to, as the writer intended, I think, that, well, that was his last shot.
How much Wally West Flash had you read?
Oh, very little.
Okay, so you were aware of him as the Flash,
yeah,
but not coming to this cold as to...
I remember when he was introduced and didn't follow from them killing off Barry Allen.
Okay. Because for some people, this is a brand new character.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of his backstory, a lot of the emotional beats and stuff. And as somebody who's a longtime fan of this character, you know, decades and stuff, it worked wonderfully for me. I hope for people who are just, you know, being exposed to this Wally West Kid Flash for the first time, that it really worked for them too. I mean, to me, this character was a highlight of the issue. And we're going to get a little bit more of him in a sec. But definitely, these are some of the strong emotional beats that we've been missing during the New 52. And I hope this is a clear acknowledgement that those are missing and that we're going to get more of these sorts of character things coming in.
I feel like it is.
I hope it is. We'll find out. Again, that next page, like I said, teases some characters in Gotham. What I found interesting was the one panel with Constantine and Swamp Thing.
Yeah, one panel. And we get one panel of the Gotham character. Just one.
And I'll be honest, I had misread Swamp Things or misremembered it. I was thinking that Swamp Thing had said, when you asked for my help to take care of the capes, you know, that's my price or whatever. It says actually my help against the capes. So this implies there's going to be potentially Constantine and Swamp Thing going after some of the heroes. So presumably that'll happen in Hellblazer. Don't know. When
somebody in capes anyway.
Well, when I had misremembered it or misread it, whatever, I was thinking that they may actually be doing a twist, setting it up to seem like they'd be against them, but they're actually going to protect them or something. But doesn't look to be the case. My bad. We then get some really quick cameos by Captain Boomerang, Cyborg, Nightwing, or Grayson becoming Nightwing, as Wally's just reaching out, trying to find some connections. And then we get the other Wally West. This is one of those things where I've got a little bit of mixed feelings. They establish that this Wally is the cousin of the original Wally, and that basically Iris had two brothers. Rudy, which is the father of the classic Wally West, and then Daniel, who's the one from the New 52, you know, father of that Wally West. Both of whom are named after a great-grandfather, Wallace West. Is it awkward to have cousins with the same name? Yeah. Can it happen? Does it happen? Yeah. So a bit of a retcon here, but kind of works. I'm okay with it. We get a nice...
This was where I thought, well, I think they're... I feel like maybe they're just going to put one of them away.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that they won't try to keep them both active, and one needs to go on the shelf. But that would... When I read this... That was my gut instinct was, well, one of them has to be put away.
Oh, same here. And my expectation was it was going to be the one they just brought back here is the one going away.
Yeah.
This is his last hurrah.
Yeah.
You know, kind of similar to, you know, when Barry in Crisis on Infinite Earths is kind of saving the Omniverse or whatever you want to call it and, you know, appearing before other people. This is kind of Wally's turn at that. But what gets me is... This is, I think, the first time we've seen the New 52 Wally West in action. We got a little in Flash 50, but most of that was actually a future version of the character in the silver and blue or whatever piteous-looking costume that it looks like he may never actually wear. So this is, again, String of Broken Promises is maybe overstating it a little, but, you know, they keep teasing some characters and sometimes they just don't get around to taking action on them. We got a really great scene with Barry Allen on how he's saving people and just some of the little tidbits of how he does, you know, checks him out. Oh, one of the kids hungry, he gets a pizza to pay for that. He redoes the kitchen. Some just great character moments.
Between frankly, the ticks of a second.
Yeah. But
that's pretty quick.
Stuff that's missing from, frankly, the Flash comic.
Yeah.
And then we get what I was expecting to be kind of really the last hurrah of Wally West. You know, hey, Barry, you know, I want to thank you for everything and go peacefully into the night. Great, great scene. Very touching. Again, I've got a long history with these characters. Flash is one of the first titles I read on a regular basis. So I love the Barry Allen character. And of course, Wally is part and parcel of that history. And then literally in the space between two panels, Barry remembers.
And we get a great callback to the watch that his grandfather gave him that had every second was a gift engraved on it. And it's a really nice bookend to that. And I really thought this was incredibly effective storytelling.
It was. I mean, to me, this was the emotional ties, the things that are meaningful on a personal level to these characters. And when I want a story that matters, this qualifies, not because they're shattering the timeline yet again, but because of the connection between Wally and Barry here, between Wally and Linda that didn't happen. You know, but those emotional beats and moments that matter in the lives of the individual characters. You know, that's a lot of what's been missing for me in the New 52. And when I first read this scene, and Barry has that moment of realization, in my mind, he almost went from the New 52 Flash to the pre-Flashpoint Flash. But they're the same guy, sort of. Really, with this character, they are the same guy. He's the only one to have made it through pre-Flashpoint, Flashpoint, Flashpoint pretty much intact. So at this point, Wally's back and he remembers. Barry now remembers, and the memories are all flooding back. The question is, how long are they going to remember? Because Wally's already saying it's getting hard to remember, you know? And is this something that after this ends, the memories fade just like Flashpoint did? I mean, the repercussions are going to be felt forever. And Wally's
I thought him being able to be brought back by Barry kind of broke that fading memory and would allow him to
possibly for Barry
the memories to all come back and all everything to have existed again that was wiped out.
But Wally is saying it's getting harder to remember.
Is he saying that after? Yep, he is.
So I don't know. And it's not like this suddenly snapped the timeline back to pre-Flashpoint. That didn't happen at all. Other than these two characters, everybody else is in the same state they were, as far as we know. I could be wildly mistaken here, but it's not like we've seen everybody just suddenly have this realization across the world.
But it seems like maybe that's the end goal.
I don't know. One of the final scenes we get here is Batman wandering through the cave, sees the glint in the background, chips away at it, and again finds the smiley face button from the Watchman.
Which is a revelation on itself, because we always assumed the Watchman was in a different, its own world. It didn't exist in DC proper.
I think it still doesn't exist in the DC universe. I think it exists in what I'm going to refer to as the DC Megaverse, because this to me, again, goes back to that scene earlier on where Wally's saying thing, you know, all of reality is kind of falling through the cracks or whatever. So I think this came from another reality, and you know what I mean?
Well, I don't know. The Watchmen was such an important series to me that maybe I am putting my wishes and hopes into my interpretation of this, but I expect to see more Watchmen going forward, and I'm really happy about it.
The scene after this, where we get the epilogue and stuff, and we go to Mars, and there's dialogue from Adrian and presumably Dr. Manhattan. To me, they very much set up the Watchmen as having stolen that decade of time, watching over this reality, and somehow trying to weaken these heroes. The question is to what end and why? And I don't know. But I think it's a fundamentally questionable move to take Watchmen, which is held up as kind of not a classic, but the classic of comics, and say that that is somehow in opposition to the New 52, which, by Dan Didio's own admission, people were very apathetic about. So I don't know if that kind of dichotomy is something that DC in any way wins from at all. I don't know where they're going with that. Now, as I recall, and I say that because I literally just flipped through it as I was talking here, the Multiversity Guidebook The Watchmen characters were not in the multiverse as it was defined there. There was a similar-ish Earth 4, but that was almost more based on the original version
of the Charlton characters.
Yeah, Blue Beetle, Nightshade, Peacemaker, etc. But I am totally taking out of this that an event we're going to get a year or two from now is basically something comes due and the Watchmen come calling, or something like that. Batman's finding of that button pays off in some way, shape, or form.
I'm kind of hoping it's a little more heavy-handed than that, and we get a little more cameos and more appearances throughout, and I think there's some fun to be had there, and that they're made more of a player in DC Universe.
Certainly possible. That's not what I took out of it, but who knows what direction they're going to go in. A lot of this was essentially the story of this issue, was declaring a lot of decisions the New 52 mistakes, or at least taken too far. And I can't say that I disagree. This had the lighter tone, the frankly, the better art in some cases, and the more character moments. It felt more classic, iconic DC to me than much of what I've read out of DC in recent years.
Yeah, for me, it felt like half an apology for the New 52.
Where did they once say they were sorry?
For me, when they talk about someone stolen years from us, someone stolen our relationships, the love we have for each other, someone stolen that. That stuff was ripped out of the New 52 by and large. A lot of that stuff was missing. You know, they didn't have that relationship between Lois and Clark anymore. They didn't have some of these other relationships.
Absolutely.
And so, for me, it's very, very much inferred that the New 52 stole some of that and stole years of these characters that didn't exist. They no longer existed in the continuity before. They had changed it for that to squeeze everything into the 5-year timeline for the New 52. So, for me, it was very much part and parcel an apology, as well as a love letter to classic DC fans. And here's the great characters that we have. Here's just some of them. Here's a touch of all of them and what we can do with them. And we're going to bring it all back. So
I definitely think certain things were stolen from these characters with the New 52, their history, their relationship. I agree 100% there. I also agree this is a love letter to what DC Comics in their universe can be, and filled me with a lot of hope and stuff that, frankly, I've been lacking in some of their books. But it also felt like they were taking a lot of the mistakes that had been made and projecting them onto, presumably, Dr. Manhattan and the Watchmen, and not holding themselves accountable, and not even apologizing, but almost playing it off as, I meant to do this, as if it was a grand plan or something.
No, I thought it was very much tongue-in-cheek that, you know, who could have done this? Who could have stolen this from us? Who could have stolen these relationships? Well, obviously, it was the people at the head of the company that was creating this. So it was all the creators and all the editors. But here are who the embodiment of those people are. That was my interpretation of that.
And it's a perfectly valid one. It's not what I felt when I read it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I felt when I read it.
Okay. I guess to me, just like Crisis kind of unraveled the DC pre-Crisis timeline, this seems to be jumbling together the New 52, the pre-Flashpoint, even some pre-Crisis timeline stuff. I don't know if that's going to help or just muddy the continuity waters hopelessly. You know, because the New 52 backstory is intact now, but now so's kind of the pre-Flashpoint stuff. And like I said, maybe some of the pre-Crisis. I don't know.
I'd be surprised if there's a lot of New 52 that continues. I would be surprised if it comes in whole. I think that they'll dismiss a lot of it.
If so, I think they're going to do it quietly. I think a lot of what we're getting coming up is falling directly out of the pages is what's been happening the last couple of months. The Green Lantern stuff seems to be more or less kind of continuing forward. Certainly Aquaman and stuff. I don't know. We'll find out. I'm very curious about this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you call it Rebirth and it's issue 53, but that's
it's
just
not
me.
Issue 53, but it's also not a brand new number one in the same way New 52 was.
I know it's two number ones.
Well, it's number one and number two in close proximity. Well, it's two number ones.
No, it's a rebirth. That's fair. It's a rebirth number one and then a number one. So it takes two number ones to launch it. So I got a feeling it's more of a fresh start than you do.
We'll find out. I don't know if either is the right choice is the problem. I'm not sure either is the wrong choice. I just think it muddies the water. DC wants to have its cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
They want to keep moving forward, but they want to revitalize. And this whole cake and eat it too thing, I'm gluten-free. It's not working for me. I'm sorry. I really want to know where some of these storylines are going to continue, particularly, you know, I mean, to me, what I took out of this, I may be getting back the classic Titans. I love that. I may be getting back the Justice Society. I love that. I may be getting back the Legion of Superheroes. I love that. Aside from the Titans, I don't know where some of this other stuff's going to happen, though.
Yeah. Do you want to grade, or do we want to answer questions from the forum before we do our grades?
I want to cover one or two things, then answer questions, then we'll do our grade and stuff.
Okay. Sounds good.
I did like the splash page at the end of all the characters that are kind of the limelight, spotlight characters of the new 50. Thought it was great. Interesting. We've got like two Robins there, two Flashes, a few things like that. So again, curious where they're going with some of this. But again, love that kind of a deal. While I like this issue, it underscored how off track I think DC's been of late, and I'm cautiously optimistic about their future. But the question is, how soon before they go off track again?
Yeah, and you've been more positive on DC than I have, but I'm getting the feeling that this did a lot more for me than it did for you, and I'm really surprised about that. This really got me excited for the direction that they're going, and I may be easily swayed, but I just feel like they really put a lot of effort into this, and it was it bodes well for me if they can continue in this vein going forward in some of these titles.
I felt very much the same way. I loved the issue. A lot of positive things. Love the art. Love the story. Love getting some of the characters back. Some of the moments. But the whole while, it was reminding me that they've been withholding much of this stuff from me for the past couple of years. That I haven't been getting this. And they're reminding me of, oh yeah, we did all this stuff way back when where we set up this Aqualad character we did nothing with. Or this other time we set up this other character we did nothing with. Or this time we were going to do this that we teased and did nothing with. And there's so many false starts and promises that I feel like I've been burned a couple of times by them, and I'm a little skittish. So it's why I've got very conflicted feelings on this, is how soon, how long is this going to last? Is this really the start of a new era of DC that could really just kick them into a new sales level and really energize their fan base? Or is it something that lasts a story arc or two, and then they get kind of lost again?
Sloppy. We hope they don't get sloppy again.
Yeah, I don't know. And then by throwing this essentially continuity bomb into it, it really muddies the water, and that's something that, generally speaking, has not helped DC in the past. We had some questions on the forum that I want to just talk about real quick, some from Rowdy from Scrubs, some from Gabe. Starting with Rowdy, he didn't read Before Watchmen, wondered if there were any hints of this, and when I read it, when it first came out, nothing seemed to allude that this was even a possibility.
No, I didn't catch that either.
I do think doing Before Watchmen and not getting, you know, filleted alive for having done it gave them the courage to do this sort of a thing, and I think if they hadn't done Before Watchmen, we wouldn't have gotten this, at least the Watchmen part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Is this taking place before Watchmen? I think the epilogue kind of overlaps with the end of Watchmen, but I'd have to go read Watchmen. Are there three Jokers because this is the third volume of Batman? Hell, who knows? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm not crazy about the whole three Joker thing. Is that an old Billy Shazam Captain Marvel? I assume Roddy from Scrubs was talking about the Johnny Thunder scene, in which case, no, it was not. But other than him being named Johnny and referring to the genie and the Justice Society, I could see some confusion because of the lightning connection. The ring in the evidence bag around page 8, didn't know what it was. Again, Legion Flight Ring, Legion of Superheroes. this was a pretty funny one. Who made Damien's birthday cake and apparently left? That's just a jerk move. I took that as Alfred made it, left it there in the cave, not knowing when Damien would be home to get it and stuff. What surprised me then is the lack of like a cake tray with one of those dome kind of covers over it or something. You know, protect it from like the bats or Bat Hound or, you know, whatever. That did seem a little, you know, un-Alfred-ish. Who murdered Pandora, and where's the Phantom Stranger and Spectre? I figure it was Dr. Manhattan that killed Pandora. Don't know, just happy she's gone. No idea where Phantom Stranger or Question were, because Question was the other part of that trinity. The fact that neither of those characters were even referenced here. Again, the Question was one they kind of teased they might do stuff with, and frankly, didn't do much with. No idea where the Spectre is.
Was the Question in the Trinity of Sin series? Yeah.
That was the third member. So they did some stuff with the character, but he was very much not a team player. And I was expecting them to do more with that version of the Question. Roddy was assuming Wonder Woman's brother Jason's a new character or missing an older reference. Nope, new character as of Justice League 50. Haven't seen the character, don't know where they're going to go. I'm wondering, like, Jason and the Argonauts kind of a thing? Don't know. How, why is the button in the Batcave? Again, I missed that the first time around. That goes back to when Wally was saying reality is from across existence is spilling out of the Speed Force. Don't know how and why that's suddenly happening, because the Speed Force has never had that before, but hey, whatever. If I'm John Q. Public working at my 9-to-5 at Queen Industries, how do I know time got reset? My take on that is time did not get reset, only Barry and Wally seem to know about the time theft at this point. I assume they're going to tell others, like, I don't know, maybe Batman. Gabe's Question also wondered how the Watchmen button got there. Last it was seen being buried with a comedian, how did Batman know to look for it? Those are some good questions. Batman saw the reflection of it in the wall and dug for it. Don't know how it got unburied from the comedian stuff. What and where has Wally been the whole time? Again, think he was trapped in the Speed Force since Infinite Crisis, but I'm going on memory there, so I could be wrong. Another good question from Gabe. The Thomas Wayne letter, has it always been there in the Batcave, kind of under glass? He doesn't remember seeing it after Flashpoint. My theory on that is presumably it's been... I mean, we haven't seen it since Flashpoint number 5. I don't think we've ever seen it in the New 52 proper. But my theory is it's always kind of been there, but maybe kind of sort of cloaked from that whole time theft thing. So it's not like it was suddenly put there. It's just it had always been there, but nobody seemed to notice it, if you know what I mean. But that's total speculation. Who the hell knows? Okay, if Flash gave the letter to Bruce at the end of Flashpoint, why did Bruce and Barry not know each other at the start of the New 52 Justice League? Because at that point they didn't. Flashpoint happened later in chronological time, earlier in cosmic time, if you will. And also because, when the time was stolen, memory seemed to fade. Everyone on the forum like Oreos, he loves them. Me? No, I'm gluten-free, they're not. Sorry.
Big fan.
Hey, I can understand it. Martian Manhunter highly endorses him, too. The whole Dr. Oz thing, Superman not being the real Superman. Again, Dr. Oz might be Ozymandias. Don't know at this point. Don't really care too much. Don't know where that'll pop up next again, if ever. In the whole real Superman thing, again, I'm hoping it's hinting towards the Golden Age Superman coming back in some way, shape, or form. Don't know. The three Jokers, at one point I was thinking that it could just be there are three names for the Joker. You know, his given name, Red Hood, and the Joker. But we've seen so many shots in here of three different Jokers that I'm kind of fearing it's three different Jokers. Possibly two from other realities, maybe pre-Flashpoint, pre-Crisis, that have somehow managed to get into this world. To me, that's a mini-series waiting to happen. And how long it waits to happen, I don't know. And then, again, with Pandora commenting, it was similar to how Rorschach died. Long enough since I've read Watchmen that those kind of similarities were lost on me.
Mm-hmm.
Again, overall, I liked a lot of things about this, the style, the tone, the nature of it, but it also was hard to not feel like it was a refreshing change, and it shouldn't be. All the comics should be this way.
They should all be 80 pages and $2.99. Wouldn't that be nice?
Or have this sort of emotional resonance or love of the history of the characters. And, and you know, there's a reward for having read for so long.
And I mean, another thing about this, it worked for me on another level, too, besides just being a really enjoyable read. Thematically, there was this story of love, hope, loss, death, life, God. You know, there's this Speed Force is really, especially if you again cross back over to the Flash television show, there's an episode where there's Barry and the Speed Force, and it feels very much like a higher power of some sort, instead of that's choosing good and evil, and And you got a sense of that here too, as well, that there, the Speed Force is a big thing, a bigger thing. Mm-hmm. And then we had the stuff with the time that people that were stolen from people, and then the older guy in the home. I mean, there's, if you just kind of strip away all the superheroes and all the great cameos and the hints of things to come, there's some really cool things going on here thematically that work on a much larger level too, that I really found really engrossing, and it really pulled me in, made me care an awful lot about what was going on in each and every page. And I just love the fact that they were able to layer that sort of heavy stuff in a comic, and keep the action going, and keep all the reveals happening, and keep the story moving along. It worked on so many levels that was quite an impressive feat, I thought.
Well, at its core, the basic story here is can you go home again? In this case, it was Wally trying to go home again, but also just from a reader perspective, can we go quote-unquote home again to the old DC universe or not? So thematically, it held together very tightly. It was a well-told story. There was a lot of depth to it, and just a lot to think about. It took me a while to digest this. You know, at first, my mind just kind of went pop from the continuity implications. But there was also a matter of just, I loved reading this comic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it reminded me of the high points of the DC universe over the decades.
Yeah.
When they would hit notes like this, they would have issues come out like this. I mean, Geoff Johns is a wonderfully talented writer. So this hit a lot of the right buttons for me. And if it was a matter of Geoff Johns had just been put in charge as chief creative officer, Dan DiDio and Jim Lee had just come into power as co-publishers.
And this was their first book.
And this was their first initiative. I'd be like, oh my god, this is wonderful. We're going to a great time. But that's not what's happened. This is their, I don't want to say apology, but this is their rebuttal, the response to essentially having the new 52 tank.
But I know we no one's happy with the new 52 currently. A very small minority of readers are happy with the current status of the new 52. But you know, if you go back to 2011, it brought a lot of people into the tent.
Absolutely,
it was a really good move, and the idea behind it to, okay, let's expand, let's make it easier to access our universe. Let's bring new readers in. I mean, the ideas behind it were sound. The execution lost a little bit over time, I think the effort was there, and it was a good idea at the time.
But that's the very thing I'm struggling with right now.
Yeah.
Is I had a lot of hope and stuff at the beginning of the new 52. I think the idea and some of the notions and plans behind Flashpoint sound very good and hold water and stuff. Is the execution going to be any good?
Well, but we have one comic in front of us, which I think was executed brilliantly. So that's all we have as evidence, unless you want to look at the last 5 years.
Well, I mean, my rating for this is going to reflect my love of the characters, the story they told here, and acknowledge some of the pitfalls and faults of the issue. There are a couple of things that were sprinkled in strictly as sales juice for other books. You know, the cameos here and there, they get all of a panel or something. But overall, I really enjoyed it. It made it up to the level of an A-. And if it had given me a clear promise of a more immediate continuation of the JSA storyline, the Legion storyline, the Calderon Jackson storyline, a few other things, or I don't know, maybe, you know, that two-page splash of all the characters, all those Shazam characters, are we ever going to see them? They were teased at the beginning of the new 52. So to me, I'm very jazzed and excited, but I'm also very hesitant and gun-shy because of what's gone before. And I'm hoping that they can eliminate that reserve I've got in the coming weeks, and that this is really a new great era for DC.
Mm-hmm.
But they still have a certain amount of proving themselves to me to do.
As I read this, I could tell that I bet the longtime reader, DC reader and lover of DC comics, a John Mayo, a Mike Myers, is getting another level of enjoyment out of this that I'm not. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know the the history of all of this stuff. As a casual reader of DC that hasn't been with them the whole time and took some time off, was a lapsed reader and came back, I enjoyed it immensely. What I don't know is how the New 52 reader or the person who saw the New York Times article and said, I'm going to check that comic book out.
Mm-hmm.
And they pick this up and don't have any Watchmen background. They don't have any of these older characters, even understanding of them, and they mean nothing to them. What was their enjoyment of this? But that didn't really factor into my grades. I'm a little concerned about what their feelings might be, but I think there's enough in here for them to enjoy it. But for me, being somewhere in between those two camps, this had everything I want in a comic. Was a page turner that I just could not put down. I couldn't wait to read. I bought an extra copy because I wanted to read it so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to wait for the mail to get here. So, and it lived up to the hype. I felt it did everything it was set out to do. I'm excited for the whole direction of DC again. I'm not going to worry about if they're going to execute or not, because time will tell. But for me, this issue was an A+, and something I'm glad I have an extra copy, because I will be handing it to other people to check out and say, here, check out what DC has to offer.
Cool. I'm glad it worked so well for you. I do know, and I think Sam falls a little bit more into that not so hardcore of a DC reader. His initial take on it was that nothing happened, which I fundamentally disagree with. But again, I think a lot of what you get out of this issue is going to be based on what you brought in with you.
I think you're exactly right, Derek, over at Comics Alternative. Although they don't review Big Two books, you know, he still reads Big Two books. I think he said so-so. Eh, it was so-so. I don't know how you could... I think you're enthusiastic one way or the other, I would think, but that's just me.
I think you get the so-so or nothing happened if you don't have the context, and you're just like, a lot's happening, but I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, different people are going to have very different feelings about this. A lot happened in the book, and I think it's something that is a clear mile marker in the overall DC timeline of publishing.
A lot happened that reveals itself upon repeat readings.
A lot happens. It's not clear what any of it or most of it means in some cases.
Yeah. But there's a lot to unpack.
Yes. There's. I mean, we've talked for an hour on it. And it's not just because it's four times the length of an average comic or whatever. It's because it was an emotionally charged kind of issue, in so much as, ooh, what are they going to do to the DC universe now? But also because there is an emotional charge to be had there if you connected with the characters.
And there's a lot riding on this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, totally. Industry-wide, there's a lot riding on this. So, you know, we're all pulling for this to be the start of something great.
I mean, even if you don't read DC, this is something that can bring a lot of readers into the store like the New 52 did. That helps everybody. And frankly, if DC were to just sink and just flounder, that's horrible for the industry. That would start taking some stores down that are close to the edge, that kind of thing. It's a big deal.
Yes, I agree. We don't want that.
All of that having been said, shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This was a regular size issue, thank God. It was Captain America, Steve Rogers, #1, Nick Spencer.
Regular size, but twice the price.
Yeah, bargain at any price except that. Yeah, $4.99. That's a little tough. Jesus Saiz, or Jesus Saiz, whichever. I apologize for mispronouncing the artist name. I gotta say, from the get-go, man, the art in this was just terrific. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like an aspect of DC Universe Rebirth had been spoiled for me before going in, a major aspect of this had been spoiled for me going in.
Really?
So, yeah. On the forum, and I think it was not, you know, somebody intentionally trying to spoil it. It's just they were kind of caught up in a discussion and blurted something out without a spoiler tag. And I get it, and I don't want to stop that kind of discussion. But I went into this with certain knowledge that fundamentally changed the approach I took to this comic. I've been reading Captain America off the rack probably longer than almost any other Marvel book. It's one of those, I've probably got more Captain America issues than any other comic. But it's right up there with Alpha Flight, Fantastic Four, and the Hulk and some stuff as to the characters I was on board earlier than Secret Wars with, and some of the initial Marvel stuff. I love the character. I always, I know some people are going to think this is sacrilege. I'm not a big Kirby fan for the art stuff, but some of the stuff that was done with Stan and Jack and stuff when they were bringing back Cap and really some of the foundational Marvel Universe stuff, it really works for me. So what I had been told going into this, that Cap was a Nazi. And I'm like, this is a guy who was created by two Jews, and in the first issue was punching Hitler in the face. Does not seem like typical Nazi behavior. I'm not an expert on Nazi behavior by any stretch of the imagination. It just seems like maybe not what they would want as a good, member of their party. So I went from being very excited to Steve Rogers getting his own series again and the new shield, the new look, all that kind of stuff, to they've done what? And it very much put the issue in kind of a position of having to prove itself or almost redeem itself. And instead of going in with a disposition of, oh, this is great, and kind of the my ranking kind of just naturally notching up or something, there was almost of a tightening down on that and a resistance to do that. Because, they've done what? Surely they can't be serious. So there was, again, that kind of a spoiler, and it wasn't a very detailed one at all.
And it was wrong.
and it was wrong. It colored the opinion I had on the book. My first reaction about the book itself, and it's funny because I'd seen the cover for forever before, but it wasn't until I actually got the issue that I realized, the wings on the mask or the helmet or whatever are missing. I like those. Put those back. It doesn't matter either way. But we get into the story, and again, we're going to have some spoilers on this issue here. We get a sequence with his parents in the 20s. And my first thought is, with parents like that, how on earth did Steve Rogers grow up to be the noble Captain America we all know and love? And
well, because of the person right there that helped save them, perhaps.
Abusive father, that kind of a stuff. It doesn't seem like the classic version of the Kents that raised the wholesome Superman. You know what I mean? I had to imagine that times may have been really rough for Steve Rogers' family, but they persevered. They believed in the American dream. They were kind of in my mind, should be the iconic immigrants.
Well, Mom was solid.
Yeah, up until the whole joining Hydra thing.
Allegedly. We didn't see that.
Fair enough. It didn't seem like the wholesome, nurturing childhood that would have instilled the characteristic Captain America aspects. That having been said, there was some fun stuff here. I like seeing Rick Jones as a member of the cast. We get a fair amount of exposition, though, as to why he's there, what his recent backstory is. The whole bit with Robbie Dean Tomlin and all his backstory was just thump, here it is, here's a couple of pictures, but, very exposition heavy. My God, does the Red Skull love to hear himself talk?
Red Trump, you mean?
Yeah, pretty much. He had the dialogue was good. It was selling what he was selling. I wasn't buying, but it was believable that somebody could.
Yeah.
I like the new Cap costume. The minute I did the page flip and we get Jack Flag and Free Spirit, I'm like, okay, this is just kind of cool.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea who those characters were?
Yeah, I've seen them in something. So I must have read it in my previous comic going, because I recognize those characters.
These characters were around, gosh, I'm going to say 450, the tail end of the original Cap volume. He was in a suit of armor because his body had kind of given up the ghost yet again on him. These were just some fun characters. They were second, third-rate characters at best.
But they were great in this. I mean, I really liked the just enthusiasm just popped off the page, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. I loved the Free Spirit basically acting as if Cap had explicitly asked for them. And Sharon Carter's like, he was against the idea. It's like, hey, this is the story I'm telling my grandkids. I'm selling it now. It's like anyone who would have an opportunity to work with Captain America would, period. I mean, that's it. And the enthusiasm, the camaraderie between Free Spirit and Jack Flag and Rick back at the headquarters when they're sharing the drinks and stuff, the sharing of stories. I mean, there was some coolness there that I just loved. These are the kinds of, again, character moments that make the characters resonate.
Mm-hmm.
Who wouldn't want to be you know, sitting in the a couple of tables over just listening to these kinds of stories get told or what have you.
It was difficult seeing Sharon Carter on the page, having watched Emily Van Camp play her, and she's much older here.
Again, this is going on from the previous, or maybe the previous volume of Captain America, with the whole Dimension Z stuff where they both aged a couple of decades.
Yeah, it's weird though.
Yeah.
It's jarring because he looks super young.
Well, and the nature of the art, not only is the pencil work by Saiz great, but the coloring by, who did the coloring? Or maybe he did the coloring too.
The coloring of the flashbacks were great.
I think Saiz did the coloring too. Okay. A lot of it is stuff that seems to come out from the coloring, and that if you had done a different coloring job, you could have de-aged Sharon Carter on some of these by quite a bit. Because there's the three-dimensionality of the tonality of the colors versus just the line work. But, you know, I was so loving this, but also still waiting for that other shoe to drop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we get to the Zemo scene, you know, with his new masters, I'm like, this is a laughable bunch of characters. These are beneath him. I am surprised he is dealing with these guys.
Yeah, but, I mean, he kind of acknowledges it, you know. I'm not ready for this.
When we get the team coming in with Cap and the other two on these sky disc things, I'm like, where the hell did these come from? But they're cool. I like the flight discs. Mm. I still like the old sky bikes that the Avengers had, but these were cool, and there's an aspect of them that almost seem like these are the little stands your action figure sits on. I don't know. It just seemed like a cool thing. Getting used to the new shield, some of that stuff was fun. Bringing in Eric Selvig or whatever from the Thor movies and stuff, that was kind of cool.
The little storyline with the suicide bomber was really effective, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In a short amount of time, showing him being indoctrinated, brainwashed, how easy it is to, just how much of a slippery slope it can be, and you just get it over your head and there's no way out, and so effective and very powerful, and you know, it felt very timely and topical.
Yeah.
And I felt like if I didn't know, which I already did, but Nick Spencer is very plugged in to what's going on in the world.
Mm-hmm. There is an aspect of how some people feel disenfranchised and how easy that is for a slick talker to zero in on that and really take advantage of it. While I liked how well that backstory and stuff for that character was done, a lot of it did feel like it was through exposition. It was effective exposition. And we went from not knowing this character at all to really feeling his loss when he dies. And it was also interesting to see how other, it's like, well, at least nobody died. It's like, well, except for the suicide bomber.
Yeah.
You know, he's still dead. Oh, well, yeah. You know,
he wasn't that bad of a guy.
No. And it gave an opportunity to show some delineation between who felt for him, who didn't even really acknowledge he was a person, which again went towards why the guy felt disenfranchised and did what he did.
Yeah.
You know, there was some definite cool things there. When we get the scene, though, at the end, when Jack Flagg has come in, helped save the day, and then Cap does what he does. And we're intercut with the flashbacks and Hydra and stuff here. You know, the last two pages, I mean, this was the other shoe dropping. No two ways about it. Cap throws the guy out the hatch or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, leaves the other guy kind of tied up or whatever and does the Hail Hydra. And I'm like, who the hell is he Hail Hydra-ing to? And it's one of those things where in a comic book, you don't have the voice inflection. Is he saying it ironically? Is he saying it not ironically? I mean, I don't think it's ironic. He threw the other guy out the back, presumably to his death. Although I have no doubt that we'll see Free Spirit having, you know, swooped up and caught him. But this is the whole thing that I think people really misinterpreted into the, oh, he's a Nazi and he always has been. Now, granted, I think there have been.
They've never read a comic book if they jump to that conclusion.
Well, I don't think it was just them jumping to the conclusion. I think things Nick Spencer has said, and I guess it was Tom Brevoort or whatever, had said really fuel that fire. And there's a certain amount of, hey, we got people talking about the comic. Yeah. Not in a good way, though. And it's kind of the any press is good press, and I don't agree with that mindset. If this thing had ended two pages early, I'll be like, gosh, I wonder what's going on with that stuff in the past and the Hydra Society.
And now I can't wait to read the next one.
You know, I would have been figuring the backstory is going to be maybe Dad fell in, got out, but this is what leads to Cap being the heroic guy he is. That's all salvageable in the back stuff. But this, let's throw the guy out the back and hail Hydra, it's like, I want to see you come back from this.
Oh, I think it's easy. I mean, it's classic comics. They do this stuff all the time. It's a long con or it's a short con.
If it was just Hail Hydra, okay, fine. He wants to get in good with somebody and go undercover.
Well, if the guy's not dead, you saw him. All you did was see him go out the back.
It still kind of is going to cheese him off a little. He's a fanboy, but is he that much of a fanboy that he'll forget getting thrown out the back of an airplane?
Something happened to a character in the last Civil War movie that another Avenger caused, and it'll be tough for him to come back from that, but it happened in the moment, and it'll all be forgotten by the next movie.
We'll see. I'm not disagreeing. I don't know. There are many ways they can go with this.
Yeah, I just the knee-jerk reactions in the Twitter sphere and internets are always hilarious and misguided. And most people haven't read the comic.
Well, and I would never have seen the last two pages coming.
Never.
If it hadn't been spoiled.
And I didn't have it spoiled, so it was a wonderful read for me.
For me, it was, waiting for the other shoe to drop, waiting for the other shoe to drop. Oh, and there it is. And I saw it coming because I was told it was coming. It's like, I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I would have read this issue had I come into it with my original expectations of, hey, cool, it's Steve, he's back.
Well, I love the flashback stuff and the stuff when a young Steve and a crappy dad and, you know, this benefactor and what's her deal. And then that had its own little twist that was just fantastic. And did it resonate? Will it resonate in the future? Well, they're leading us to think that. It was just well crafted. Nick Spencer.
We know Nick Spencer's a great teller.
We know he's writer. A great guy. Yeah. I mean, I really love most of the stuff he's doing. So, but this is another level. This was really, really, really complex and well done. And I just hats off to this creative team on this book. It was great.
I mean, I thought it was a very well done issue. And even going in with a bit of a negative a slant in my mind
mm-hmm.
of, okay, you got to prove yourself. You know, by the time we were getting near the end, it's like, well, you brought back some cool characters. I'm loving what you're doing here. The art's terrific. The story's well told. I don't know if I'm crazy about the direction of the story they seem to be heading in right now, but I also don't know the full direction either.
Mm-mm.
So I read the story differently than Nick Spencer laid it out, and I think that's unfair both to me and to him. And again, it's not necessarily anybody's fault. These things just kind of happen. It's the nature of not even fandom, because so much of this was getting spouted all over the web and media. To me, it's an aspect of the fall of journalism, if anything. I will remind people both now and a little at the end of the episode of we do have spoiler tags on the forum.
And 99% of the people use them.
Yes. And again, I'm not saying anyone was being negligent or trying to ruin anything. I don't want to come down hard on anybody because I don't think that's the case. I think everybody is usually very respectful and stuff. This was an accident. It happened. It's not like I'm bent out of shape or anything out of it. It's just I do. If I'm mad at anybody, it's probably Tom Brevoort with the "Hey, we got people to talk about it" attitude. I think that's counterproductive. If they're essentially doing almost clickbait stories, if you will. Hey, let's see what kind of crazy stuff we can do and get people to talk about it and get up in arms and, oh, we'll backpedal or something like that. Hope that's not the case, but that's kind of my fear. For me, B+, some really good stuff. This could be the start of a really strong arc.
Mm-hmm.
Curious where they're going, both with the Red Skull, with Zemo, with these other characters. And if we're finally going to get some resolution on the fact that Red Skull still has some of Professor X's brain in him, giving him the telepathy and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten about that leftover storyline. Yeah, that's true.
It's not leftover. It was recently used in Uncanny Avengers.
Well, it was leftover for me from that terrible, terrible crossover event that they had. What was that?
Where I don't know. There have been so many.
That happened with, that was just god-awful. That's the last time I had seen him. But for me, this was a really great read. A-, would have been higher if it was not $5 for 40 pages, but it was really, really good.
the $5 stings a little bit.
Yeah.
A little inexcusable, but yeah.
Still a really, really good comic, and something somebody should read if it hasn't been spoiled for them.
And I'm really hoping that this creative team gets a good couple of story arcs under their belt on here, because I think they're a good match for the property. They're a very talented creative team, and I think getting on something like Captain America will give them a higher profile status than some of the work that Spencer's done before.
I got a feeling. Really, yeah, I got a feeling we're not going to get a lot more Morning Glories out of him. He's going to be busy.
Yeah, it's a shame.
He's got the fix. He's got this. He's got Ant-Man. He's got something else out there, too. I don't know how he's going to keep up with all these.
Well, Morning Glories only has issue 50 left on the schedule. I don't know what's going on after that, if anything.
Oh, okay.
So I hope that's not the end of Morning Glories, because I'm enjoying that. But I want him to pace himself, too, and be able to deliver on what he's working on.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen some creators that get 5 and 6 books going, and then the quality is not there.
Yeah, that's not good for anybody, including the creator.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we move on to our other book?
John, I hate to. We've had such a great couple of books to review here. All right. I guess we have to. We owe it to the listener.
The listener who's left, because everyone else collapsed from exhaustion. This is a longer episode than most, but I had a feeling that was going to be the case.
Yeah.
I just had, like I said, a lot to say about that first book. Anyways, our other book of the week is Joyride number 2 from Boom Studios. We've got script by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly. We've got art by Marcus Toe. This is the second issue. Is this a mini-series or is this ongoing? I forget.
I don't know. I thought it was a mini-series, but I don't know if it was initially announced as one. You know how they do it.
Yeah. I couldn't really recall where the first issue left off, but this really jumps in the middle of things with a chase sequence and some stuff like that.
It did not leave off here. And I felt like maybe there was a bridge issue that I had missed.
Well, that ever-popular 1.5?
That issue between 1 and 2 that was maybe released on Free Comic Book Day or something from Boom, because I was like, this is not the way to continue that story. It was really, the first issue was really good and really fun. And then this one just kind of just jumps to a random planet. And it doesn't have the same identity, I don't think.
This reminded me of like the pilot episode of Farscape. And it's been a long time since I watched it, so I could be misremembering. There's a certain amount of the Ben Bowder character suddenly finds himself across the universe, across the galaxy, whatever, and is just in a constant state of what the heck is going on? What are all these aliens? You know, what's the lay of the land? And just kind of the drinking from the fire hose aspect.
Mm-hmm.
There's an aspect here of, okay, we're starting in the middle of chasing. Who's chasing to? Okay, wait a sec. Let me reestablish who my leads are.
Which one, which female is the free spirit and which one is the guard?
Mm-hmm.
From the first issue. I got confused.
The free spirit is not the guard. The guard is the other one.
Right. Right. Uh-huh. The guard is the one that didn't steal the crystal.
Yes.
But at first you're like, wait a minute. Now who is who? What is going on?
Well,
why are they so close? Because they just met. They're not best friends.
And the guard is the one narrating it. And it's basically, I've got my troublemaker and I've got my soon to be dead person.
Yeah.
You know, and they're trying to kind of hold things together. I kind of felt like the three leads were sort of reestablished over the course of the issue.
Yeah, over the course of it, yeah.
But I also felt it was kind of, things were very reactive versus proactive. And there was, again, there's a lot of new world, ooh, look at these bug alien things. Oh, look at this other thing. You know, something where there's a lot of eye candy. And there were some moments that were fun, but other moments where it felt a little chaotic.
And they had the opportunity to do some really fun stuff on this. They had all this smuggler's cash, and they were going to spend it on this basically haven, just giant mall planet that they could do whatever they wanted. They were going to spend it and do all these things. They didn't do anything. The guy bought a jacket.
No, really, he got his own jacket altered.
Okay, he didn't even end up buying the jacket.
Didn't even end up buying the jacket.
And then one of them steals a crystal that turns out to be an egg of some kind. I mean, it was a real missed opportunity. It could have been a fun story that could further cement who is who. define their personalities a little bit more. They could have all kind of, but to go right into the stealing the crystal like that, and we just met them. We just met them, and you're changing who they are already.
The point of this issue, though, was to introduce Coalstack.
Yeah, you gotta get him on the boat somehow.
Because he's the one who knows this neck of the woods, and they don't. But he doesn't have a ship. They do. Match made in heaven. Yeah, I don't think so. So he's clearly getting introduced to, I don't say the team, but the crew of this ship, because they don't even know how to fly the damn thing. You know, so there's an aspect of just hang on for the ride kind of a thing here. A fair amount goes on in this issue. I think a decent amount happens in this issue, and I think the two are different.
Mm-hmm.
The antagonist is kind of set up in the framing sequence at the end and the beginning and end of this issue with the brother who's chasing after them. But this felt, again, chaotic, reactive, and, again, not where we left it last issue.
Yeah. I mean, I really felt the first issue was really strong and had a lot of potential, a lot of fun to it. Really introduced me to three main characters that I was excited to spend time reading on the page. And then it jumped to a second issue that was, yeah, I think chaotic is the right word. It just was all over the place. It didn't continue that sense of fun. It didn't continue developing those characters, and it really, really lost the thread of the magic that it had in that first issue.
Well, and you had mentioned earlier how they have all this stuff that they're using to go buy what they need and stuff.
Yeah, they jettisoned it all.
Yeah, they jettisoned the whole thing. Just space it. I'm like, what?
Why? Why? Was there a weight issue? Was that even established that there was a weight issue?
Well, I think there were the missiles or whatever behind them they needed to get away from. I still think there could have been a better plan than just space everything you've got.
Yeah, made no sense.
Yeah. There was an aspect of this that was fun, and I kind of liked. It could make for an interesting ongoing series, but it's also something that I feel kind of needs a little bit tighter writing, a little bit of a solid editing to kind of pull it together and, you know, reestablish things and then get the ball rolling from issue to issue, mm-hmm. kind of a thing. It has kind of a Sci-Fi Channel sort of a vibe to it.
Yeah, it does.
Whether that's a good thing or not, I'll let others be the judge. It, depending what era of Sci-Fi Channel, it could be, it may not be. This is something I could see kind of sort of fitting there and being fun. But the question is, are we looking for something that's fun? Are we looking for something that's got a bit more meat to it, mm-hmm. and holds together better plot-wise a little bit? I didn't hate this. I thought it had its moments, but there were other places where I thought the characters were acting, frankly, a little stupid, and it took me a little bit to get back into the issue.
Yeah, I was really disappointed, but Emma, I like that first issue so much. I'm wondering if I can chalk this up as a sophomore slump and give it one more, give it that third issue to see if it can right the ship, and literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
And if not, then I'm out. I'm not going to continue past three, even if it's a 4-issue miniseries, and the third issue is like this, because I just didn't think this paid off at all and was just terrible. It was just terrible.
For me, it wasn't terrible, but I can definitely see the disappointment. I would say, since you had such mixed feelings between the two different issues, give it another one as kind of a tiebreaker. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's exactly what I'm going to do.
That makes sense. I mean, for me, this was a B-. It still shows some promise, but it lost its way a little.
Yeah, I'm at a D+. I just thought it was just really, really horrible. And just nothing like what that first issue was, and I was really disappointed.
That's a shame. I hate to hear that. I mean, again, I can understand it, because there are a few places where I felt they were just spending mm-hmm. a little more time on the planet with no real point to the scene.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope they can pull it together.
There was definitely potential there to do something.
Yeah.
And we were on such a good run with these first two books, too, and then that's the stinker.
Well, this is a big week for me. I've read 39 comics, including the three we've just reviewed. I've still got like another 18 or something left to read. That's a total of like 57 comics. I'm going to a convention this weekend, so I'm probably going to be getting a little bit behind as we get into Rebirth and just God. The next few weeks.
We've got San Diego coming up. You're never going to get caught up. You're going to be behind until September.
I was current up until this week. Last couple of weeks, I've been saying every time I'm current on my reading.
The last 2 or 3 weeks, yeah. You just righted the ship, John.
True, true. But when, like, 57 books come out in a given week,
yeah,
it's a little bit to take in. And plus, one of them not only was oversized, I read it twice. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff coming out. There's a lot
of Tuesday. It is Tuesday. It is only 5 days after the comics came out.
Yeah, and getting my books on DCBS delay.
Yeah, 4 days, really, yeah, right?
2 days or whatever. It's not a big deal. But I loved the way Grayson ended. I thought that was good.
Yeah, that was a really good issue. I was wondering if they were going to wrap it up in this one or wait, and I really thought that was great.
That and there's a plot point similarity between that and what's going on in Daredevil that I don't want to give away, but it's something that periodically happens in superhero comic books.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that ended that I thought had a nice closure to it was Superman, Lois, and Clark.
Yeah, that was a wonderful issue. Really, really liked that. That whole series was a super pleasant surprise. It came out of nowhere, and I really, really enjoyed the whole thing.
Yeah. Latest issue of Mockingbird I thought was a lot of fun.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I really liked that, too.
Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. They did something there I hadn't seen coming. I thought that was interesting. I'm curious, you know, how the market reacts to what they did.
How about Scooby Apocalypse?
Wow, gosh.
How about that? That was not what I was expecting at all.
So, if you had to give it a rating, what would you give it?
Ooh, C minus?
I went with a C plus because there were one or two things I thought showed a little bit of promise. I'm trying to rack my brain for what those were.
Yeah, I mean, the premise of the book is a spoiler, so I can't really release it, but, I mean, it was surprising.
It is a reimagining of the Scooby property.
Very good. That's the way to say it. That's exactly
everything that I felt went right with Future Quest did not here.
Yeah, and Jim Lee on art didn't save it.
Yeah, I think he did designs. I don't think he did the art.
Yeah.
And it's I'm curious where they're going with it. It was one that I had it was more or less what I expected.
Yeah.
The
two prequels for DC Rebirth, Justice League 50 and Superman 52, I read after Superman Rebirth, and they were really good. I don't think you're hindered by not reading it.
I don't think so. You just get a little bit of information in Rebirth before you would get it in Justice League, but nothing that fundamentally changes, I think. Having read Justice League after reading Rebirth, I interpreted a few things in there differently than I would have if I'd read in the other order. Specifically, the end of Justice League, that issue.
Yeah.
But I thought both of those were good reads. The price tag on Justice League, $5.99, again, a little stiff.
A lot stiff, yeah.
Yeah, but that's just going around. And yeah, we're getting $2.99 books over at DC coming up, but they're also twice monthly in many cases, so...
And All-Star Batman, the Scott Snyder book, is going to be $4.99. Is that right?
Sounds right.
Yeah, so it's going to be. And DC Rebirth, the second printing of DC Rebirth, number one, is going to be $5.99.
And it's going to be square bound.
Yeah, which is cool.
I'm glad I got the non-square bound version. I hate square binding. If you want it to lay flat for like that splash page at the end, you know, with all the characters, you just can't.
You're in trouble. Yeah. We got letter 44. Yeah, issue 25, my favorite Charles Soule book.
Have not read that one yet.
Really, really good. Continues to be the strongest that he's a part of, I think. You're not reading Dream Police, are you, by Straczynski?
I gave up after the first issue, I think.
Yeah. It's on issue 10, 2 years later, 3 years later. Moving right along. It's still crazy weird.
I respect J. Michael Straczynski is a writer. I think he's got a lot of creativity, a lot of brilliant ideas. I think his work on Babylon 5 was groundbreaking for television and just awesome television to watch. There is a level of depth and substance to that series that just most shows just don't have. I have found his comic book writing often to be not to my liking for the most part, because while he's had a few things here and there that have been fairly good, Rising Stars, few of his runs on at times at Marvel, there's also an aspect where I feel he's trying to show how clever he is.
A lot of high concept stuff, yeah.
I don't mind high concept, but it's, hey, you didn't see this coming because I'm smarter than you. And it's not that he's setting out to do that. That's not his style, but that's sometimes how some of his stuff reads.
Yeah.
You know, oh, you really misinterpreted Spider-Man's origin. It's really, this is the secret of it.
Yeah.
Or the same with the Fantastic Four. Or, you know, this, that, and the other. And sometimes he's just not telling the stories I want to be reading with the characters. I like writers that, through their writing, show me how clever I am, because they very subtly planted the scenes and I can connect the dots just a hair before they show me the dots connected, and I feel smart because of it. I like that.
Yeah.
I
can see that. The ninth issue of Star from Brian Wood, the penultimate, right before that, the final 10th issue. And boy, it's really, really good. Still really, really good. I'm going to be sad to see this one go. A really strong, strong comic from Image. And another issue of Tokyo Ghost, issue 7, mm-hmm. Rick Remender and Ryan Murphy on art. Not Ryan Murphy. Who's the other one? Something Murphy. And it's really, really good. And I was kind of worried about this book, but it kind of righted the ship as well, and is really strong. So,
have you been reading Spider-Man Deadpool?
Yeah.
Fifth issue came out. I thought it was
that, yeah.
Really fun. Where they left off on the fourth issue, I'm like, how are they going to move forward? I thought that
was it. Yeah, I thought issue 4 was done, because it was a pretty good ending.
It pays final. Off on this issue.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun. How about Mighty Thor? What'd you think of number 7 this week?
I'm looking forward for them to get back to
Thor?
Jane Foster again.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt this was two or three pages of teaser for the issue and next issue, and then a bunch of crap, we've got the rest of the issue to fill.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't care for the part 1 or like the big Loki story. So, yeah, it was great. It felt like a filler issue.
Absolutely. I was very disappointed with that.
Still enjoying Squirrel Girl. Very surprised. Issue 8 came out and is really good.
It was good. The other one that really surprised me this week was Uncanny Inhumans.
Oh, I'm off all the Inhumans.
Crystal finds out that Medusa and Johnny have been dating, because Crystal and Johnny used to date.
Mm.
And again, character moments of the relationships and stuff like that was front and center. I love that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't need my comics to be soap operas, but I need them to be more than slugfests.
Yeah. Ms. Marvel 7 was really good. I like that book.
Mm-hmm.
Really strong.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. It was some fun stuff with the younger Avengers in there. I also thought Captain Marvel was pretty good this week. And Batgirl was a nice kind of resolution to
the
side era.
Batgirl did a good job, and there was some, glad they brought Bob's Tarr back for some art chores. That was nice. And I like that they went back and did that double page spread where she's making her way around the room talking to everybody. And I liked that. I think that might have been,
it was a nice end cap to the party at the beginning, or the go through the room and what were people doing at the party scene at the beginning.
Yeah, when they relaunched with the nuke outfit and everything, they had that scene, and then to have another one, and that was really nice. And I think it was a fun run of Batgirl. I enjoyed it.
It was. I think it's one that'll be memorable, and I like how they kind of tease they may get back to that point at some time.
Mm-hmm. Good week of comics.
We also got the final issue of Justice League 3001.
Oh.
Where they pretty much just summarily end the story. It very disappointing in terms of payoff and closure of the book. But, you know, hey, it's going to happen sooner or later.
Yeah, I think a lot of these creators probably were not at a stopping point when they got the memo on Rebirth. So I'm sure there's going to be a few of these instances
where they just
don't end the way you would like them to.
But I think in this day and age, if you're writing comics, you've got to have that exit plan.
Have it in your back pocket just in case.
Ready to parachute out of a story at any moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good week. Like I said, I've still got a bunch of stuff left to read. There's just so much going on these days. Other thing I do want to mention again, just a reminder on spoilers. And I'm mentioning this not because of what happened on the forum, but again, in short order, I had two or three comics, some aspects of those spoiled, a couple of TV shows, and this is through coworkers, through internet things, other stuff disconnected from the podcast and the forum. But, you know, I personally, I don't like spoilers, but they're getting to where at times they're just really hard to avoid. This is part of why when we have these discussions like we did, it was fairly in-depth. One, we typically tend to be very spoiler light in these episodes, but these episodes are also coming out, a week and a half after the comics are released. Mm-hmm. So you got a fighting chance to read the book first. And we say on the show notes and on the cover, the episode image, what comics we're doing. We even announced that a week in advance. So we try to play fair because we don't want to spoil the books for you guys either. On the forum, we have spoiler tags. They're pretty easy to use. They've got a spot where you can put, you know, kind of what's being spoiled. Obviously, you don't want to put, you know, blah, 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 killed so-and-so, and put blah, 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 killed so-and-so in the spoiler, too, and it shows both. That's kind of pointless. But if you were to say, ooh, you know, I'm going to do something that was revealed in this issue of, you know, book X, just put, you know, book X spoiler, bracket, you know, what's in there. That way somebody says, no, oh, I've read this. It should be safe to read, or it's not, whatever. The mindset I use is I try not to judge if I think, oh, is this a spoiler or not? Because maybe I'm not remembering something, maybe I'm misremembering something, but if it's something that was kind of revealed or most likely revealed in that issue, it's better to be a little more cautious than just throw, you know, care to the wind or whatever and just, oh, well, I'm going to give everything because we said there may be spoilers in here. Because I've got the forum out there so you guys can discuss whatever you want to discuss, whether I'm current on the book or not. I don't want my reading to be a stumbling block for discussion or something, but I also want it to be somewhere that everybody feels they can safely go into all the threads and stuff and not have something unexpectedly spoiled, and they've got a fighting chance to be reading at their own pace. So I'm trying to give this again as a service to all of you guys, just because I want to promote discussion of the comics of, ooh, that was cool, not crap, I saw that coming, because I was told.
And you can even start a spoiler-filled thread, I did, for DC Rebirth, and I even put it in the title, Spoilers Within, so and you were warned.
I was going through that one today, and everybody was using spoiler tags. I thought that was awesome. I really appreciate it.
We doubled down on the spoiler tag.
Well, it also kind of let me take stuff at bite-sized chunks in a few places, too.
Yeah.
Because, again, a lot to discuss in that comic.
So, yeah, it's not like it's verboten. It just clearly label it.
Yeah. Label it, be respectful, and just if spoilers don't bother you, that's fine, but they may bother other people. To me, I use comics as escapist entertainment, and I like to go into them cold and see the story as the writer, you know, spells it out and plays it out. And when I've got information coming in a different order than they intended, it changes my experience. Not better or worse, just different in some cases. Often not better, though. So, that having been said, the preview spotlight's coming out in the next couple of days. I think I'm going to have to check when the next previews comes out, if it's 22nd or 29th, probably the 29th.
Next couple of days after this airs, right?
Well, the preview spotlight episode will, but the next will come out a couple of days after this, provided I get it edited and up.
Because I haven't sent my clips in yet.
Well, I'm going to a convention this weekend, so it's going to be fun. Who knows? Maybe it goes to a Friday episode and I get something else on Wednesday, but hopefully it goes up Wednesday. But the next previews itself will come out, I think, on the 29th. I got to check that. But the Saturday after previews comes out will be our teleconference. The following Saturday will be the deadlines for the following previews spotlight. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Holy moly, that does it.
Cool.
Join us next week as we discuss Superman Rebirth number 1 from DC, Spider-Woman Omega number 1 from Marvel, and Revisionist number 1 from Aftershock.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.